Good morning. Welcome, everyone, to the Mystic Council meeting. Is that coming through?
Yes.
Okay. First off, I would like to say happy summer. You know, solstice just passed the other day, and, you know, it's now summer. So we'll get right at it here. Introductions and announcements before we get rolling here. We will be obviously having through the webinar, so I kind of hear an echo. I don't know if it's just these computers, but make sure your audio is turned off. I do prefer council members around the table raising their physical hand, not the computer hand. It's a little easier for me. Online participants, please do raise your hand on the computer, because that way we can get you up on the list and get you unmuted. Couple things. We do have a number of council events coming up the next day or two. Tonight, following the council meeting, we'll actually be having our outgoing council member tributes for Mr. Peter Ehrstad and Mr. John Pappalardo. Following that, we will be having our 50th anniversary of the Magnuson-Stevens Act and our normal chit-chat around the bar after that. And then tomorrow we'll be having a sunset cruise. More details on that tomorrow. But yeah, so a couple things. Got a lot going on in this council meeting. Also, for folks that are interested in making public comment will be tomorrow at noon. So if anyone wants to get public comment, please see Alex Dunn in the back there waving his hand. Or those online, please send Alex Dunn a email to get you on the list so you could do public comment. With that, let's open up the meeting. We have some guests with us today. Some of you have seen. We do thank NOAA Fisheries for sending along some leadership. We have Eugenio Pinero Soler, the NOAA Fisheries Assistant Administrator for Fisheries. And we also have Sam Rausch, the Deputy Assistant Administrator for the Regulatory Program. I believe Eugenio would like to say a few words and maybe open it up to a couple questions from the council. So I'll kick it over to you, Eugenio.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning to all my friends, my brethren from the New England Council. As you know, I call myself a council creature. I grew up with the Caribbean Council. I came up from a fishing family, tuna family in a tuna town, and I've been related to the fishing industry forever. When I took this job, my son took over my business, fishing business, so I'm very, very much comfortable with the position I hold now, which I always thought for many years that always it should be a position for someone from the industry, recreational, commercial, so I'm more than happy to be leading the agency in these moments of change. For me, it's a matter of doing things in not a better way, because I'm not better than anyone else, but put all my heart and all my experience, not to tell you what to do, but to listen hard what you have to say. Because there is a dilemma, which is that we are a big nation. We have 8 separate management councils, and one size does not fit all. Each one of you is different, has different needs, and they have to be addressed separately and in a unique way, and try not to impose any view that we have or that we have had in the past. To me, that would be an insult to come here and tell you guys what to do. That's all the opposite. I'm here to listen to you and to engage with you and to assist you in any way you think it's better for us to move this ship forward. With that, instead of talking too much, I am going to stop right here, and I'm going to, if you don't mind, Mr. Chair, I'd like to engage with the council members from from different sectors to see what do they candidly have to would like me to give more importance, talk to in this next 3 years that I have in this position. Because let me tell you, once I'm done as AA, I'm going back to the water. So for me, it's very important to do whatever I can do for the American fishing industry now. So with that said, council members, Jackie, would you be the first one to, to jump in the water?
Thank you, Mr. Soler, for the opportunity to speak. And good morning, everyone, council members. So quickly, I just want to thank you and thank also Mr. Petney and Dr. Hare for your immediate response to the Gloucester fishing community when the fishing vessel Lily Jean went down. We, shortly after, days after the vessel went down, we had gotten a call from Mr. Soler, and he immediately came up with his team from DC to meet with fishermen and also made himself available to the family. So thank you for that. It's gone a long way with the community of Gloucester and many of us. So thank you, as well as Dr. Hare and Dr. and Mr. Petney, for also being there for the community. So quickly for groundfish, I would just make 2 points, and I want to be able to give everyone else an opportunity to speak. The first item for the commercial groundfish program and the sector program, the council's working on a Amendment 23 review right now on the monitoring program of the sector program. And what we are hoping for is that we are going to get an industry-funded program. We're very fortunate to have had federal funding for many, many years to cover the cost of that program. But as we will see, that program is very, very costly, and when compared to the net revenues in the fishery, we're spending an exorbitant amount of money on monitoring a very small amount of discards in the fishery. Eventually, that will become the responsibility of the fishermen because it is an industry-funded program, so we are very hopeful that we will be able to make improvements, have those discussions with the council, and get your leadership in DC on how we can improve the monitoring for the groundfish sector program. The other item that we are really need help on is just science in general. We have a plethora of data that is collected that needs to be used to help us in our assessments. The fishery dependent data is really a vital source of information. That needs to be, we need to get to a better place where we're looking at fishery performance and fishery data, especially in light of just simple issues that happen with our federal trawl survey, mechanical issues, missing areas that are surveyed. So we need to get to a better place in our assessments and get a little bit more advanced to help the fishing industry be able to have a plan for the future. So those are my two items. Thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you very much. My name's Togue Braun. I'm a seafood dealer out of Maine, and I would like to thank this administration for starting the Office of Seafood and ask for your assistance in marketing U.S. seafood. Fishermen are by their nature independent and not always really willing to, well, eager to work together, which makes it difficult to have like the commodity boards with, you know, that you might have with farmers, avocados, beef, whatever. There are a lot of small scale producers of very high end, delicious, healthy seafood. Americans would be doing much better off health wise and economically if we ate more domestic seafood. And we haven't had the assistance in marketing that the traditional land-based agriculture folks have done. So I applaud the Office of Seafood. I hope that you will reinstate the Salt and Style Kennedy program for marketing and really just do whatever we can to help Americans understand just how amazing our seafood is and help them feel less fear over preparing it and help our small-scale producers get their goods to market and get good prices for them.
Thank you. And I have good news for you regarding the SK program, so stay tuned.
When will that news come out?
Stay tuned.
Thank you.
Anyone else want to speak? Jeff Smith?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Haney, nice to see you again. I really appreciate you making the trip up here to see us, spend a little time with us. I just wanted to quickly jump on Jackie O'Dell's comments regarding resources needed for surveys, assessments, that helps us do our job here. There have definitely been some staffing changes at the Science Center and the regional office over the past couple years, and that's definitely impacted the ability to complete surveys, do research track assessments, get regulations in place in a timely manner so that the fishing industry can go fish. And so what I would just ask is if there's anything that you can do to help make sure that Mike Pentney and Dr. Hare next to him have the resources that they need to do assessments, to do surveys, and to get these regulations in place. You know, we've had to change our process here at the council when we do our annual spec setting process. We'd usually set them for 3 years, and we've extended that because there's a lot of uncertainty on when assessments will happen, and the further we get out from the data, the less certain that data is. So just anything you're able to do to help get agencies the resources they need so that they can help us would be much appreciated. So thanks again for making the trip up here.
Mr. Alexander?
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair, and thanks to me for coming up. I wanted to kind of jump on what Jackie was saying about the science. As a member of NTAP, I've been on this since 2014, Northeast Trawl Advisory Panel, and we've been working on developing an industry-based survey for all our different species for 12 years now. And we finally got the pilot program up and running, thanks to Captain Rule here, who went and made the first set of toes that we needed. The money, I know you don't have anything to do with money, but you have friends that might have something to do with money in Washington, and we're going to need that industry-based place. We're going to need that industry-based survey financed going forward. And it's expensive. So I just wanted to put that out there that we're going to need some money for that in the future, and it's going to be an ongoing thing, and hopefully it'll be another data source for the scientists to look at in our assessment. So thank you for that.
Mr. Pappalardo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And yeah, thanks for coming up. Two things I wanted to raise. The first is, as you travel around to different councils and talk to different members of different industries, I think if you dig down, you'll hear just how desperate some of us are to find a way out of the fisheries. We're older. And consideration of a vessel buyback program, not just for this region, but perhaps coastwide, it's very difficult to source new vessels, very expensive. Our council and the Mid-Atlantic Council are currently scoping the potential to change some of the restrictions on upgrading your vessels. So we're starting there, but we have a tremendous amount of vessels and permits in our fisheries, and we don't have as much fish as the people with those permits would like us to have. That's just a reality. So whether it's a vessel or permit buyback, I think that's something that needs to be discussed openly. The second thing is, and coming from a council background, you understand how important a council is. The second thing is making sure that we put the best possible council members, appoint the best possible council members at the table. And that's how you're going to get the best results out of the process. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Thank you very much.
Mr. Perdnock?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Henyo, for making the trip up here. You know, I've had the opportunity to throw some questions at you at ICAT and HMS as well as today. What one thing that you pointed out is how things are different among each council and how management or decisions may be a little different depending upon the what area or what location you are, you know, within the fishery. What I'd like to point out is that for us up here with cuts to seasons and bag limits with a 2-month cod possession and 10 months out of the year zero possession and other reductions, that how, for instance, bluefin tuna ties into a typical recreational angler leaving the dock where they go fishing, they go after bluefin, they go ground fishing for cod when it's open, haddock and other species, striped bass near shore. And that when there are closures or cuts to seasons or bag limits, there's a significant impact to the recreational community and the entire blue economy, such as what happened last year with the bluefin tuna closure. The boats just didn't leave the dock. And then what recently came out is for instance, the sub-ACL for cod was only used 50% of it, and that really came from the fact that when the bluefin closure occurred, they didn't leave the dock, and then less fish were caught, in my opinion. So how that's all tied together, you know, for us up here, say for a for-hire standpoint, we may have seasons and bag limits that are such that they become so constraining that we used to have I call it the New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania crew that would come up here and go fishing and spend a few days, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, fill up the ice box and go home. They're really not here anymore. They'll look at like New Jersey that has a favorable season at bag limit for black sea bass where we have four, we no longer have cod, so they take those bookings. So that's right. I don't know what the answer is because that covers a few different, it covers not only the councils, it covers the Atlantic States Marine Fishery Commission, but it is to the detriment of the recreational for-hire fleet. And I think, as you know, the recent national recreational policy came out said that when looking at impact to the recreational community, that you have to look at the whole blue economy and the economic impact of it. It's just not limited. That came out with the policy. So I wanted to point that out. I wanted to thank you and your administration for your efforts and the recent changes in attempt to get better MRIP data, better catch data, and hopefully that'll be positive and work for the future to help with the management of our stock. But thank you for your time.
Mr. Rule.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, leadership, for being here to listen to us rant a little bit. I mean, I know I'm supposed to be seen and not heard because I'm not from New England, but I'm not going to preach too much on science. Everybody knows my stance on the science, and it's extremely vital to fisheries going forward, but I think there's some other things that we could possibly explore, possibly bringing in outside academia to help take some of the burden off of the Science Center when it comes to doing a stock assessment or an update or a benchmark. I mean, in the not so distant past, we lost a lot of heavy hitters and personnel at the center, and we have yet to fill those slots. So everything's kind of been pushed to a longer timeline, and we have a lot of species that are, in stock status unknown, or we just don't have good science, or we don't have good, good assessments on. So that might be something that we can almost do as a stopgap effort to at least give us something to kind of base some numbers on for the next couple of years. And the other thing I wanted is kind of against what Mr. Pavlardo was saying. I'm not trying to get out of this business. I've been in it my whole life, and I intend to stay in it my whole life. My son's following up behind me, and I want him to be able to do it. And if we have grandkids, I want them to be able to do it. But one of the things we're facing is my boat's 55 years old. I'm only 49. My boat's paid for. She's in excellent shape, but right now I couldn't afford to replace it. The cost of replacement to that vessel is going to be exuberant, and with the unknown status of the valuation of my permits, because it's a lottery pretty much. I mean, it's almost like playing bingo on which permit's going to be worth money that year. Banks are real, hesitant to extend any amount of money for any amount of time. So I don't know if there's a possibility that with the new the new Office of Seafood if we can institute some type of program similar to, you know, similar to what farmers have, to where we can either get access to grants or low interest loans or something like that to help ease the graying of the fleet, which is a big problem. I mean, you'll hear about it in a little bit when we talk about the discussion for possible metric changes for horsepower and length, but it's a big problem. I mean, the average age of vessels now is at least 20, 25 years old. And the only ones that can afford to replace them are ones that have multiple vessels and are able to utilize certain things like capital construction, or, you know, can rely on the money from, you know, income from other vessels to help pay for that. But a single owner operator in today's world, I can't see any way that I can afford a $10 million investment and be able to pay it off. I mean, I'm in a situation now where we do fairly well with the science work, we do fairly well fishing, but it's because I don't have any payments. If I had a $10 million loan against me, it'd be a whole different world. So I think that, you know, that's something that, and it's not just localized to me. I mean, it's a pretty broad problem. If you look at any of the ports up and down the coast, the last meeting we had in Portland, which was, it was sad to me because, you know, the first couple meetings I've been to as liaison, we've gone to Gloucester, which is, you know, was the mecca of fishing on the East Coast for centuries. And then we go to Portland, which was, you know, the same thing. It was a massive place. I have a good habit of going to places that used to be something. And it's sad to me to see what the state of fisheries has become in a lot of places. I mean, in Portland, I went and looked at some boats just because that's what I do. I saw them in the evening, and then I went back after the meeting was over and looked at them in the daylight, and they were actually Marshall's Thicker. There was four boats there that had been seized. So it's the industry itself is in bad shape. I mean, it's not necessarily an issue of availability of stock or the fish themselves. I mean, a lot of it's got to do with numbers on paper, but the actual industry itself is really hurting because we just don't have the mechanism to be able to modify and modernize as we should be able to. So thank you for taking my comments.
Thank you. Let me tell you this to all. The Secretary of Commerce is very much immersed in this process. We're talking about long-term loans, low interest. We are very much aware. I'm leaving an example. I know exactly what is happening. The vessels, rust never sleeps. So we don't want boats tied up. We need better boats to go out there, better vessels. The Secretary is very much aware of this, and the USDA issue, it's a new one, and it was a long time coming. It was totally unfair for us sea people, you know, commercial, right? We have been treated as children of a lesser God for too many years. So that has changed. So we are already moving into treating the fishing industry as the Department of Agriculture treats their people. So you guys deserve much better. Not only you, but every single fisherman that risks his life to go out there everywhere in the United States deserves much better than what we have had in the past. So we're going to keep working, and we're going to make all this a reality, and the USDA office is going to be a very useful tool for all of us, infrastructure-wise, vessel maintenance, everything. Nothing is off the table. We're going to be digging and working hard to make sure that the U.S. industry comes first when we talk about fisheries in this country. We want you to rest assured that you are not alone, and that we are going to be working with all hands on deck to turn the tide and make sure that. I don't see this as this year or next year. I see this as the next generation of Americans in the water. You see, we are in it for the long ride, not for the short ride. But we have to correct some mistakes from the past. So I hear you.
And last up, I have Mr. Platts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Henio, for being here and listening. I come from a niche fishery, so I won't talk about my fishery. It's rather small. But, you know, I'm really sympathetic to Bobby's comments and John's. And so briefly, I agree with what John said and the struggle we have with overcapitalization here. We dealt with that at a rather high expense in past decades with the boomer generation trying to get out of fisheries, and there are there aren't adequate numbers of replacements. I think a much more economically modest buyback proposal could be pretty effective and address a lot of the overcapitalization issues that we face here. And as we know from our past experience, overcapitalization, you know, leads to a lot of other longer-term significant resource problems if it's not dealt with. I don't think that idea is in conflict with Bobby's, and I'm really encouraged to hear your comments because of the economic issues, access to capital, and some of the regulatory constraints, one of which we'll be discussing this morning, that have really hamstringed this industry for decades. And I'm really optimistic that we're going to start to address that issue. My concern is that, or one of my concerns is that we have a mandate, or at least an imperative, to manage at the speed of nature. And our system is, you know, there's a lot of things we can't control. We can't control climate change. We can't control how successful species are or are not at spawning. We can't control a lot of things, but what we can control to a large degree is the speed at which we operate. And we deal with constraints that are in part a function of the democratic process that works so well. But there are many constraints that we could probably look at and find ways to keep the benefits and remove some of the causes that slow things down. And a lot of it is at the individual council level. And I think this council can do a lot to speed its own process up, and a conversation would be very effective on that subject. But I think there are also, at a federal level, there are guiding parameters and regulatory processes that make it very difficult for us to manage at the speed of nature. And if we don't manage at the speed of nature, the degree to which we fail to do that is a degree to which we are going to fail to be successful. And so while I applaud the democratic nature of our system, we need to better balance the need for speed and the need for all voices to be heard, because right now I think we're a little out of balance, and it is part of our management struggle. And I thank you again for being here and listening to these concerns.
No, thank you. Thank you for your comments, and thank you all for your input. My staff is in here. We're taking notes of everything, every word that's been said in here, and we will be debriefing, and I'll be back, and I'll be back. So I want, when I'm back, I want to come with good news and results in fisheries, as in life. Results are what count. You see, it's not words. Words go away. But we want to make sure that we make all the modifications, deregulate what has to be deregulated, have better management, better science, council members. The difference is that when I began at the council many years ago, John, don't say anyone. It's a vast difference. Nowadays, you guys are much more knowledgeable of everything in life, and so that makes my job much, much easier. And that's very valid. I mean, management has to catch up. That's not the only thing. Science is at the other side. Science is flying. We have to catch up with science. Science is not going to stop for us. It's not going to look back. So we have to use science and management and be more nimble, more swift in the and manage better. So You have no idea how delighted I am to have listened to you. It's for me, it's music to my ears. You see, when I, every time I'm in the council, because those are the important things that keep the industry moving, and that's why I took this job to make sure that we would do better. I'm not happy with it. I always tell my staff that, and that's why I did this session today with the allowance of the chair. I always tell my staff that when I sit and talk to someone and that person doesn't offer me a solution, my attention span is left 1 minute. See you. You see? And you have done what needed to be done. You gave me the solutions. You told me how the way, the path to follow. And I thank you for that. So with that, I'll allow you to continue with your meeting, and I'll hang around. For the public, I'll be here for the next 2 days, so anytime you want to ask me a question or a comment, you just pull me over, and we can have a coffee or a beer, or I'll be here for the next 2 days. Thank you, Fortuna.
I just want to thank again Sam and Yanio for coming here, opening up this dialogue. We appreciate you coming here in person to listen to us. I thank the council members putting some very thoughtful comments. I mean, things that we've struggled with, we are struggling with, will struggle with, and I once again appreciate you, Yanio, definitely opening up this conversation. To me, it's really just this open line of communication. As you said, you'll be back. We do expect you to be back, so to be continued. Thank you very much. With that, we're going to open up with our reports. I have a quick announcement. Sorry, I forgot to mention. Mr. D'Angelo will not be with us today, but he will be joining us tomorrow and Thursday. So I just wanted to make sure people understood that. For me, my reports, it feels like it's been a very busy time period since the April council meeting. Speaking to Mr. Pentney the other night, we were talking about it feels like the April council meeting was only 2 weeks ago, because there's been a lot going on. For myself, obviously, I participated in the CCC, the NRCC. I got the opportunity to listen in and go to participate with the social, our statistical committee's dynamic reference points working group process in Boston. We've also had an XCOM meeting, I believe that was 2 weeks ago, but I won't really go into those because that's part of Dr. O'Keefe's report. She'll kind of go into it. I did want to give a brief update. I think Terry threw a little out there about our regional industry-based trawl survey. Our phase one project did finally get out on the water thanks to Captain Rule and his crew, Dr. Jim Gartland at VIMS, that was actually the science crew, and also to John, some staff at the Science Center for John Hare, specifically Dr. Anna Mercer and Jason Morrison, who did a lot of the hydrographic information collection. It was a success. In and around the weather, apparently there was some weather days there that weren't so pleasant, but they got a really good, got all the stations completed. They completed many of the goals that we were looking for. One thing is we did learn, you can do surveys in and around windmills, and I believe you guys got pretty darn close. I think one of the recommendations is probably you want to do those close ones during the daytime, not during the night, because apparently the lights aren't as bright as we expected. We actually were able to use the gear, which is the normal Southern New England, Mid-Atlantic, Nearshore Trawl Survey, the NEMAP gear package. We actually got to use that out into deeper water. Sounds like there was a lot of success around that, considering that package generally is only used out to, 50 fathoms. I think you guys went out to about 160 fathoms. Still had the gear performing top notch, so that's a positive sign for us moving forward. We are having our next full panel meeting, NTAP meeting, in New Bedford. So if anyone's interested in coming in person, it will be at the Port Authority. That will be July 9th in a couple weeks here. We will be getting a more in-depth report about phase one and how it all went. We are still in the process of finalizing phase two. We've got a lot of things on the table there. I think we've finalized a lot of things, but we're planning on having another RFP, hopefully this summer, to get phase two up and running and out on the water for next year. We will also have our general science center updates about how all the various spring surveys went. So if anyone is interested, you're more than welcome. It will also be online. With that, I will kick it over to Dr. O'Keefe for the council executive director report. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, everyone. I also would like to take a minute to welcome our NOAA guests, Henyo, Sam, but also Maureen and Katie. They do a lot of the lifting to get Henyo and Sam here, so really appreciative of that. As Dan mentioned, it has been a very busy stretch since our last council meeting, April to June, so I'll walk through some of the meetings that we've attended. But I want to start off with, next slide, please. A fond farewell. Ms. Chandler Nelson left staff. Her last day was just last week. She was a fishery specialist on scallops for the last 2 years, so we just want to recognize and thank Chandler for all of the work, her attitude, and her friendship over the last couple of years. Next slide. A brief financial update, the most positive part of it being a huge thank you to NOAA Fisheries leadership for supporting the councils. We received the remainder of our fiscal year, calendar year 26 funding on May 20th. This is really great news. It makes my life and the staff's life a lot easier. Last year, we had a lot of uncertainty with funding drops kind of spread out through the year. To have all of our funding at this point in the year and be able to go into the second half of 2026, knowing that we have all of that money, allows us to plan ahead, think ahead, and strategize. I'm very happy to say that just the other day I was able to get out all of the state technical assistance contracts for our five state partners, so happy to have that done. It's a little later still than average, but earlier than last year, and so very happy to be able to report we have our money. And on Inflation Reduction Act, we're not going to go into a lot of detail on IRA projects at this meeting, but just to say that spending and project work is on track. Next year is the last year of the IRA funding, and we do anticipate spending the full award through the end date of December 31st, 2027. Next slide. So as I mentioned, I'm going to take a little time going through the different interagency meetings and updates and activities that occurred since April. I'm going to start with our U.S.-Canada activities, TMGC, and the U.S.-Canada Steering Committee, and what we're calling this year the U.S. team, which is kind of the larger body of TMGC members, steering committee members, and the staff support. The council is now the U.S. organizational lead for the U.S.-Canada process. Really what this means is that we've taken on some of the logistic and administrative roles. This is, I think, helps streamline some of the communications internally among the U.S. team members as well as with our Canadian partners. We've had a couple of meetings. TMGC met on May 7th, and the steering committee had a follow-up meeting on May 13th. Key outcomes from those meetings was we've decided to revise the U.S.-Canada science coordination process, allowing TMGC members to listen to the technical science coordination meeting. That's scheduled on coming up on July 13th. This is an area where the managers, the TMGC members, both U.S. and Canadian, felt as though we didn't have a strong enough, kind of robust understanding of how the science discussions had gone. And so we asked for, and we requested, and TMGC approved the idea of us being able to listen to those science conversations. We also approved a process review scheduled for 2027. We will start planning for what the scope of that review will include this summer and fall. The U.S. team met just a couple of weeks ago, separate from Canada, and we had consensus on scientific methods and results, as well as levels of uncertainty related to our resource sharing allocation. So that's the split between how much the U.S. gets and how much Canada gets. The survey-based biomass distribution for Georges Bank cod and haddock, and that's looking at our own U.S. stock assessment, trying to determine how much cod and haddock is included in the eastern management area compared to the full Georges Bank, the western portion of it. And we also, the Science Center, responded to several requests from industry members and from our council to look at industry information, distribution of Georges Bank cod and haddock, prepared a CPUE analysis looking at where fishing effort occurred. Most of that information matched well with the survey-based biomass distribution for cod and haddock. So the TMGC U.S. members came to consensus on approving those methods, results, and uncertainty. The last bit of this that we are moving forward with is establishing a U.S. industry advisory group. The goal of this is to provide a structured format for gathering informed industry perspectives to support the TMGC in our stock negotiations with Canada. So this is expanding beyond just TMGC members, which are members of the council, and really trying to rely on informed, experienced, knowledgeable industry members We'll be starting to move forward with this as soon as this meeting ends this week. TMDC members will be reaching out to industry members to invite them to join this industry advisory group. We're shooting for a minimum of 6, but we have a list now of close to 15 different industry members that we're hoping to gather. We will have a meeting in August, and that meeting will help inform our negotiations with Canada coming up in October. Next slide. Dan mentioned we had CCC and NRCC in May. The CCC meeting was in Homer. Homer's a beautiful place. It takes a long time to get there, but it was pretty fun. I was very happy to be joined by our chair and vice chair, as well as the assistant regional administrator, Ms. Kelly. The meeting included round-robin updates from all of the councils. Really, the focus of those updates were on councils' responses to Executive Order 14276 about seafood competitiveness and some of the different regional priorities and challenges. NOAA Fisheries provided updates on council budgets, NOAA budgets, NOAA science, and priorities. Some of the key outcomes from that meeting. Nationally, the risk value matrix has been suspended. NOAA recognized that many of the councils provided feedback that we wanted to focus this effort regionally, and so the national component of this has been suspended. But the CCC did pass a motion that we would continue to prioritize the regional work. And for us, that means that we will continue to work. We have a regional working group on this effort that includes NRCC representation. So both councils, commission, center, and regional office. And we have a meeting scheduled for next week, actually, to continue this work. And we hope to have some results to bring back to the NRCC this fall. Another key outcome was kind of improved understanding of the regulatory review process and the status of things now. Some advice from NOAA leadership around, you know, shooting for kind of clean specifications actions. Those maybe have a more likelihood of being implemented in a timely manner. I think we know we've dealt with some things coming out of this council that have taken a long time in review. And so we'll have a lot of discussions at this meeting around, I think, all of the actions that we're working on right now, herring, scallops, whiting, groundfish, and the idea of putting forward clean specifications for implementation by the start of fishing years, and then follow-on measures, management measures to be included in actions that don't necessarily have to be implemented by the start of a fishing year. So we'll continue this discussion through the week. But this was helpful to understand that the regulatory review process can take time, and there can be delays in our expected timeline for implementation. So I think our best approach is to consider how we do business and not, you know, rely on something getting through the process more quickly than we've kind of been told it may not be able to. Related to that is there was some updates from NOAA NEPA staff. There's an evolving process around NEPA. Some of the regulatory statutes that were in place, the statute remains, but some of the implementation of it has changed over the last few years. There's been some lawsuits and some changes in the authority part of it. So in some ways, this gives us a lot of opportunity. We're working very closely with the regional office and trying to develop some guidance, things that we can take advantage of, streamline some of the way we do business. Not everything has to be a framework or an amendment. And I know that has been a little bit of a hang up for our process, where everybody kind of thinks in those terms, framework amendment, but there's other tools in the toolbox that we're starting to take advantage of that can increase our efficiency. NRCC met in Providence, Rhode Island. The key outcomes there, as I mentioned, we're continuing the regional prioritization, formerly was the National Risk Value Matrix. We will have an intersessional meeting this summer, and results from that will lead into the next bullet here. We've signed the assessment working group, tasked the assessment working group to start drafting a 5-year stock assessment schedule. We used to work off of a 5-year schedule. Last year, things changed, and we had to kind of work in a triage mode for the last couple of years, but we are trying to get back to a 5-year schedule. So the year one of that 5-year schedule would be 2028, so we do have a little bit of a runway to try to think about this, incorporate some new ideas, consider some process changes around timing, how we use data updates, what is included in those data updates, and the application of our risk policy, which we will be passing tomorrow. The council will be passing that tomorrow. Next slide, please. Dan also mentioned an SSC Dynamic Reference Point workshop. This was an IRA-funded initiative that we've taken on. The goal of the workshop was to establish understanding of our current approaches to determine reference points in our stock assessments, identify methods for possibly changing to more dynamic reference points for our New England council-managed stocks. Where the status of that is now, the workshop was fruitful. It was challenging. This is a complex topic. We expect a report from the contractor that's working on this by the end of July, and the SSC will discuss it again in August. Our goal is to try to have the SSC develop some best practice guidance that we can work with the Science Center in moving forward and try to advance some of our approaches on reference points. I did want to mention the council and GARFO had a staff-to-staff meeting in Gloucester. I want to thank Mr. Pentney and his staff for hosting us. I think everybody had everybody's feedback was really, really positive. This was really useful. The staff enjoyed getting together, talking with each other, and I think we made a lot of progress on some topics that maybe we work a little bit in isolation sometimes. So we do recommend continuing these types of get-together meetings in the future. The last meeting here is the East Coast Coordination Group. We met virtually on June 5th. As a reminder, this is the three councils on the East Coast, the Commission, and NOAA partners, both from the Northeast and Southeast regions. The main focus was updates on IRA initiatives from the three councils, as well as updates to the action item menu that came out of the Climate Change Scenario Planning Initiative. That goes back a few years. I was really kind of impressed and proud to see the amount of progress that's been made in addressing those action item menu topics. And also we are planning for an East Coast governance workshop. This will include all of those entities that are part of the East Coast Coordination Group. We'll be hosting that in February next year in Boston. Next slide. So moving into what we're doing this week and this meeting, just a reminder, we introduced this new format of kind of management timelines and status updates for actions at our April meeting. I want to thank Mr. Perosa and council staff for making this an easier way to visualize what we're doing and where we're going. So this is just a status of council, recent council actions. You'll note that some of the dates under proposed rule, final rule effective have been filled in since our April meeting. Things are moving through the regulatory review system and rulemaking process. We anticipate some more things to come through relatively soon. Monkfish should be coming through relatively soon. And we should hear something about Amendment 25 at some point in the next few months as well. Next slide. So for where we are now and where we're going in this meeting, this slide is very similar to what we showed in April and where we would be with these topics. As I mentioned, risk policy, we are shooting for final action approval at this meeting. Holistic strategic plan, you'll get an update on where we are with the implementation portion of that, and we're looking for final approval in September. Other updates, I just mentioned the risk value matrix. That's more now of a regional prioritization. We'll talk about that in terms of our 2027 priorities later in the year. We will have a couple of updates on Executive Order 14276 this morning, one being the vessel baseline evaluation and another related to the Herring IFM program. And we'll have a much deeper dive into the IRA initiatives at our January, which is actually February, meeting in 2027 and catch everybody up to where we are and where we're going and how we're finishing that. Next slide. Where we might see some changes from what was presented in terms of timelines and proposals from our April meeting to this meeting, groundfish and scallops, we have a couple of changes possible. At this meeting, you will be receiving the report on the Amendment 23 monitoring program review. We will have an update on the Framework 68 ABC control rules, but you can see that orange arrow. We are most likely going to push the timeline on that and not take final action in September. We'll initiate Framework 74, which is specifications and other management measures, and we'll, as usual, do our recreational measures in the first meeting of 2027. For scallops, similarly, this one is that clean specifications idea that I mentioned that came out of the CCC meeting. Framework 42 right now is considering including specifications for 2027, default measures for 28, as well as other management measures related to some spatial management of scallops. We will be having a discussion about potentially splitting those things apart and focusing on specifications for final action in our December meeting and pushing those other management measures to the first quarter of 2027. Next slide. You'll receive a report on the Monkfish Skate listening sessions that took place in April and May. Herring, again, very similar to what I just described on scallops. There's specifications as well as other management measures related to river herring and shad. We'll be having a discussion about possibly splitting those apart and focusing on specifications for final action in September and a later final action on the other measures. We'll have a discussion about what will be included in the scope for the small mesh whiting action that we're doing this year. And you'll get an update on the habitat, essential fish habitat framework. This is a follow-on. This is the second round of this. We've completed the 2025 action, and now this is the remainder of our species and stocks. Next slide. So here's what we're doing in a nutshell. You can refer back to this slide to keep track of where we are. This is what's included on our agenda. We have a lot of updates, and we have a lot of actions to initiate. We only have one final action related to risk policy and a couple of reports and reviews. I believe that's all I have. Oh, one more slide. Correspondence, just as a quick note, we did send a lot of response letters to the regional office related to experimental fishing permit applications. Most of them were no objection letters, a couple of comments. And we did submit our response, our updated response to Executive Order 14276 at the end of April. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. O'Keefe. Questions on the Executive Director report from the Council? Ms. O'Dell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Dr. O'Keefe, for the presentation. So I just have three quick items I just was hoping to ask. The first one is more of a thank you for the TMGC restructuring of this year and bringing in an industry advisory group. Really look forward to working with you and the TMGC members on getting those invitations out following the council meeting. So thank you for doing that. I think that falls in line with our strategic planning of collaboration as well. So that could be used as an example of the work that we did over the winter. So kudos to you for that. And I also just wanted to make a recommendation that I think moving this year is going to be important to engage the advisors, but moving forward, it would be important to figure out a way to how to engage them at the beginning of the process when we're looking at fishery performance and data that we'll be sharing with the Canadians. I think before the assessment process would be great to have them be involved with that as well. So you had mentioned that on the discussion of clean specifications and making sure that our actions go forward in a timely manner. And you said we were going to be discussing that more this week. I'm just curious, was the discussion that's occurred to date, you know, some of our management measures are at times to be helpful for the implementation of our specifications. Sometimes we don't receive catch advice or result, you know, we've had swings in our catch advice recommendations, and therefore the management measures tied to that have been very helpful for the fishing industry to be able to handle that. So what's the thought on, I'm glad we're not dropping management measures, but the timeline might be different. So is it, hopefully those will be relatively close together so that we can open the fishing industry starting on the start of a fishing year, but not lose that important kind of mitigating and fishing industry management measures that may be helpful for whatever the specifications may be.
Dr. O'Keefe.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks, Mr. Dell, for the question. We certainly don't want to lose management measures. And I know that there has been discussion about the idea of using five-year specifications. We took an action to allow ourselves to do that. I think that's actually going to be very helpful as we move forward to get off of kind of the spec-setting hamster wheel. That's how I've described it. And create more time to be able to do management measures. what we're facing right now is several, we have several actions this year that if we don't get the specs in on place, then we have default measures, scallops and groundfish. We've got a little bit of a messy situation with herring. And so the idea is that we need to be able to ensure that we have our specifications implemented at the start of our fishing years to prevent all of the other kind of, you know, challenges and inconveniences that go with along with default measures. Once we can start moving forward, I think, with our five-year approach, which then allows us to do in-season adjustments, more utility from those data updates, so that we're not always needing to do an action for specs. That's really going to free up a lot of time to do those other management measures. And I'm hoping that this isn't like 3 years from now. It's like we need to get through this one more cycle, I think, this year and have this new kind of framework process in place. So completely understand that, you know, oftentimes when we're putting in specs, these accompanying management measures are designed to go with that specification package. The goal is to try to get back to an approach like that. But we do also want to ensure that, you know, for groundfish, like you're not having default measures until they possibly run out. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for that explanation. Look forward to the discussion this week. Last question, promise. NRCC discussion, stock assessment scheduling. We're good to go with 2027. There have been no changes in 2027 as proposed and discussed. And then I'm just curious, was there any discussion at the NRCC about the fall 2025 survey or and how that may be handled in upcoming assessments that will be taking place? And I don't know if that's really a question for you or I can wait till John gives his update. I can hold that thought. But just curious, I know the fall 2025 was a difficult survey year, and we're going to be having a lot of upcoming assessments that'll be based on that. So just curious if the NRCC discussed that at all.
Dr. O'Keefe.
Thanks. If it's okay with Dr. Hare, I think I'd like to defer until his report and he can answer directly. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. O'Dell. Any further questions for Dr. O'Keefe? Seeing none, up next, I have Regional Administrator Mike Pentney with the update from the RA.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, everybody. Number of items to go through, and as always, I'll run through these relatively quickly and then take any questions that you have at the end. Starting off with scallops on the Scallop Research Set-Aside Program. This year, we received a record 40 applications or proposals for the 2026 Scallop RSA competition. Those were all reviewed through the normal process for technical merit and management relevance. We couldn't select all 40, so we had to narrow the group down to 14 proposals that we've selected to support. Those are currently being processed by NOAA Grants. We do expect the awards to be made next month in July. Under this competition with those 14 proposals, all of the 2026 RSA scallops will be awarded. And almost all of the 2027 RSA scallops will be awarded. We reserve some, you know, in reserve for unexpected, you know, circumstances that may arise. Moving on to groundfish for a little bit. On April 27th, we published the final sector rule that allocated initial ACE to groundfish sectors for fishing year 2026, which, as you all know, began May 1st. The final rule is based on catch limits that were set in Framework 69 and the default specs. Those allocations remain in place until we replace them with the catch limits that are in Amendment 25 and Framework 27. So if those are approved and once they're implemented, then the specs, the default specs, will be replaced. May 7th, we published a temporary rule, as we usually do, allocating zero trips into the closed area to Yellowtail Flounder and Haddock Special Access Program, or SAP, for common pool vessels to target yellowtail for the rest of fishing year 2026. As a result, the SAP is only open to target haddock from August 1st through January 31st, 2027. Northeast Molts vessels fishing in the SAP must fish with a haddock separator trawl, rule trawl, or hook gear. Also, this in-season action closed the regular B Days at Sea program. The use of regular B Days at Sea is prohibited for the 2026 fishing year. This applies to all vessels issued a limited access MULTS permit. This has been closed this way since 2019, so nothing new there. Moving on to monkfish, we published a proposed rule on April 23rd for Framework 17 to the Monkfish FMP. This framework proposes the 2026 and 2028 through 2028 recommendations that came from the council for specs and a streamlined way to implement accountability measures when the annual monkfish catch limits are exceeded. The final rule is under preparation. The comment period ended on May 26th, so we're working to get that final rule out soon. Not on an action, but on an email survey that we sent out in the beginning of May, May 13th. Hopefully all of you with a federal permit have received this, but we emailed a short survey to all permit holders in our region, focused on understanding the prevalence of internet access and the different brands of chart plotters that fishermen use. The survey will close June 26th, so it's coming up. So hopefully if you received the email but haven't replied, you have a few more days to reply. As a little bit of context, the survey is intended to support the Executive Order 14276, Restoring American Seafood Competitiveness. This executive order directed NOAA Fisheries to modernize data collection and analytical practices that will improve the responsiveness of fisheries management to real-time ocean conditions. So in order to help us sort of move forward on that directive, we're trying to better understand the use of internet and electronic chart plotters on vessels. And that gives us a good frame of reference for things that we might want to do that would rely on those technologies. So far we've not received a tremendous number of responses. So please, if you haven't responded and you're listening, please consider doing so and encouraging your colleagues to do so as well. There's really nothing here other than help us understand the technologies that you have available to you on the vessel so that we can make sure that we're communicating to you and leveraging those technologies as efficiently as possible. Another update from our permit office, we have updated our electronic vessel permitting process. So permit holders and individuals that are authorized to act on their behalf must sign vessel permits electronically through the Fish Online portal and either print or download a copy of the permit to your mobile device. Paper or electronic copy is acceptable to enforcement, provided it is readily accessible on board the vessel at all times, including when at sea without cellular service. So if you download it to your, so it's physically on your phone or your tablet, then that's sufficient. We've also updated the issuance process for regional letters of authorization. Participants may continue to apply for or withdraw from LOA programs through the Fish Online portal. Once issued, the LOA will be displayed on the vessel's electronic permit within Fish Online. So we'll no longer email copies of LOAs to permit holders or vessel operators, but it'll be right there on the Fish Online permit. Finally, we've launched a fully electronic self-service pilot program for the Summer Flounder Small Mesh Exemption Program, which is one of our LOA programs. Participants will use Fish Online to manage their enrollment consistent with other LOA programs. However, the requests under this pilot are processed automatically and in real time without manual review by our permit office staff. So this way, basically you go online, you check a box, you fill out the other information that's asked, and you immediately get your LOA. So this is intended to provide faster response time and increased flexibility for the industry to enroll or disenroll from that program. Moving on to some recreational measures for summer flounder, scup, and sea bass and bluefish. On April 28th, we implemented the Mid-Atlantic Council and Commission's Recreational Measures Setting Process Framework for summer flounder, scup, black sea bass, and bluefish. That framework made limited revisions to the process that the Council and Commission uses for setting recreational measures and modifying recreational accountability measures. That was followed 2 days later by an interim final rule that announced the 2026 and 2027 rec measures for summer flounder, scup, and black sea bass. as recommended by the council and commission, including conservation equivalency for summer flounder and black sea bass, which waives federal coastwide measures in federal waters for those two fisheries. Two more quick items. On June 15th, we published a final rule implementing the Blue Line 2026 Blue Line tilefish specs and reaffirming previously projected golden tilefish specs. Those are status quo for golden tilefish and blue line tilefish of note. Substantial increases for both commercial and recreational total allowable landings based upon results of the most recent blue line tilefish assessment that was completed last year. All management measures remain unchanged. And last, we published on April 26th or 27th an interim final rule implementing framework adjustment 17 to the mackerel, squid, and butterfish FMP. This action revised the Atlantic mackerel rebuilding plan, set final 2026 and projected 2027 mackerel specifications, which substantially increased the quotas available to the fishery. We also increased commercial mackerel possession limits substantially, and then modified the in-season possession limit adjustment process for that fishery to be more responsive to changes in landings. And then last, increased mode-specific recreational mackerel possession limits so that we have different limits for private vessels versus for hire vessels. The public comment period was open through May 12th. We received a few comments on that. But that was an interim final rule, so it was effective back in April. With that, Mr. Chairman, I am done, and I will take any questions.
Thank you for that. Mr. Pentney, any questions on the RA's report? Mr. Hansen.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the report, Mr. Pentney. Back to your original, where you started with the scallop RSA. I recognize that there was a lot of challenges with the RSA this year because of the delayed NOFO, and 2 years of RSA were allocated, almost. Is there going to be an official NOFO this year? And if not, is the what hasn't been allocated set aside for renewed focus on survey areas that may be identified in the future?
So, yeah, there's no plan to do another NOFO for the remaining 2027 RSA scallops. We are holding those in reserve for sort of unanticipated circumstances. It could be a survey issue. When we lost the HABCAM, you know, we had to make some accommodations. So we typically try to hold some in reserve to address things that we can't predict. That way we have some scallops that we can typically add to an existing approved project and supplement that proposal to take up whatever the issue is.
Okay, thank you. I know we have RSA priorities that we're going to be talking about later on. So they're actually for 2028 right now, because 2027, those priorities don't sound like they would apply.
Correct.
Ms. O'Dell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Putney, for the update. Lots going on. So we talked about this a few weeks ago at the Groundfish Committee meeting, and there have been concerns from sector managers in the fishing industry with groundfish on the full implementation of Amendment 25. The longer that it goes, the more difficult it will be for the sector managers to be able to monitor the quotas. There's trading occurring. It impacts the lease value as well. So there's a lot of quota movement going on, and it becomes even more difficult to track. So we talked about it a little bit a few weeks ago at the Groundfish Committee meeting, and don't mean to put you on a spot, but we also have some great friends in the room too, and maybe this is outside of your hands and now at the Secretary of Commerce's desk, but what are we thinking about for the full implementation of Amendment 25? Are we working on it?
I think you already answered the question. It's out of our hands, at least my hands. But the packages are under review.
Mr. Alexander.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chairman. Thanks, Mike. So that survey, is the Are we looking at that as something for ropeless fishing gear to be looking at in the future, or is that not about ropeless gear? Because I automatically went right to ropeless gear when I got thinking about why you would be doing that.
It's not directly, but it's certainly not unrelated. I mean, I mentioned the executive order, which does want the agency focused on improving the use and leveraging available electronic technologies. So in order to do that, having a sense of how many vessels truly do have, Starlink or internet access on the vessel versus relying on cell coverage when they're in cell range. How many vessels are using electronic chart plotters, which can be leveraged to do multiple things. So really that is the focus. The nexus with ropeless is when we're talking about, if the councils were to move forward to relieve the restriction that fixed gear have to have two end lines, buoys on, marking on both ends, then we want to know, well, what chart plotters are people using? Are those chart plotters that people are using, can they accommodate things like electronic, buoy geolocation systems? If we were looking at ropeless in terms of that action, what percentage of vessels that are offshore already have internet access versus what percentage would have to purchase internet access in order to have that, live things. And that would help us with the economic impacts of any potential action related to that. So not having the information creates a sort of black hole of not knowing what the impacts might be. Having the data gives us a better indication of what the impacts would be moving forward if we were to do that.
Further questions for Mr. Pentney? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Pentney. Up next, I have a tag team effort by attorneys McDonald and Sikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a few brief updates. The first update involves a court decision in the New England Fishermen Stewardship Association versus Lutnick case. As you may recall, this is a challenge to the council system, saying that it violates the appointments clause of the Constitution. On April 30th, 2026, the First Circuit ruled in favor of the government and rejected the appellant's argument that the Magnuson-Stevens Fishery Conservation and Management Act violated that appointments clause. The court held that the council is not is advisory in nature and not considered to be made up of principal or inferior officers, and that the district court's ruling, where the court at that time wanted to take out separate provisions, where the court said that the council could have a sort of a pocket veto over the secretary's ability to rescind an FMP, for example, that was not necessary to sever that because the council by itself was not comprised of principal or inferior officers in violation of the appointments clause. So in response to that, the appellants have filed a petition for rehearing of the First Circuit's decision. The First Circuit's decision was made up of a three-judge panel. The appellants have asked for a rehearing en banc, which is the entire First Circuit judges to rehear that issue. That was filed on June 15th, and the court will follow up on that motion at some point. The other matters are procedural, involving the Relentless and Loper Bright cases that were before the courts and underway in briefing. Both of those matters have now been put in abeyance by motions of the parties that were granted by the courts, and meaning that they're not going to issue a decision as long as the parties continue to provide status updates to the court. And that will be held in abeyance while the council goes through its process of considering the Atlantic Herring IFM program and whether it will take that up or whether the secretary may need to take that up. And so with that, I will now pass over to Scott.
Attorney Sikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, everyone. I just have one new case I wanted to report out on. Last month, Conservation Law Foundation and several other plaintiffs filed a lawsuit against the president and other federal officials stemming from the February 2026 presidential proclamation unleashing American commercial fishing in the Atlantic, which as you will probably know, which removed the commercial fishing prohibition that the prior administration had put in place in the Northeast Canyons and Seamounts Marine National Monuments under the Antiquities Act, and also challenging NIMS final rulemaking, removing the commercial fishing prohibition and our regulations related to that presidential proclamation. There are six claims in the complaint, basically challenging the president's authority to issue the proclamation and making procedural and substantive challenges under the EPA, the MSA, and NEPA. The remedy that the plaintiffs are requesting are to declare the presidential proclamation and the rulemaking void, and that the kind of status quo under the prior proclamation would rule. The agency received that lawsuit in late May. I believe our responsive pleading is due early next month. Thank you.
With that, any questions for either of our attorneys for the general counsel report on the cases put before us? Seeing none, thank you very much. Up next, we have the Science Center report. Dr. Hare.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'll run through my report and then Jackie try to answer your question. I'll try to answer your question in stride. So if I don't, you can ask, you can rephrase and ask again. So bottom trawl sort of survey updates. Bottom trawl survey. Our spring bottom trawl survey was conducted March 9th to May 27th. It was aboard the NOAA ship Pisces. One of the efforts that we've been working with NTAP on are establishing contingencies if Bigelow is not operable. Getting Pisces ready to conduct the bottom trawl survey has been part of that planning. So we successfully got Pisces set up. Pisces is a sister ship of Bigelow. We got the sort of the lab processing almost identical to Bigelow. She was late leaving, about a week late, and then had some mechanical issues during the survey and some difficult weather. We immediately decreased sort of the station density across the whole survey area to not have it sort of typically we realize we're running behind and we decrease station density as the survey goes along, which then has a greater impact on the New England Council managed species. But we sort of decreased station coverage immediately to sort of smooth out that reduced station density. All strata were sampled, so the data is usable in stock assessment, but there is likely to be greater uncertainty because of, you know, 66% station completion, not 100% station completion. We can talk more about that in questions and answers. I do just want to give a special thanks to Office of Marine and Aircraft Operations, the Pisces officers and crew, and Northeast Fisheries Science Center staff for getting that vessel ready to conduct the full bottom trawl survey. That is sort of looking forward to a 2028 time period when Bigelow will go into midlife refit. We'll be in sort of the yard for, you know, 12 to 18 months. We now have Pisces ready to step in and do bottom trawl survey in this region. So just a lot of, you know, gratitude to that team that made that happen. Our ecosystem monitoring survey followed up shortly after Pisces. That survey focuses on primary data is Atlantic mackerel egg survey. That survey, we had to take days away from the Ecomon spring survey to add to the bottom trawl spring survey to get as much bottom trawl coverage as we could. We then focused Ecomon spring on areas where Atlantic mackerel spawn to keep that Atlantic mackerel egg index usable in the Atlantic mackerel assessment, which is a Mid-Atlantic Council managed species. Bottom trawl survey also does Equimon sampling, so those two survey groups work together to coordinate to get as much area of Atlantic mackerel spawning covered as possible between those two surveys. The bottom trawl longline survey, Gulf of Maine bottom longline survey operated from April 24th to May 16th, and all stations were sampled, so that survey was at 100% completion rate. The HABCAM work on Bigelow, towed HABCAM, all planned lines were sampled, and we evaluated and tuned a buoy recovery system. So if we lose HABCAM in the future, there will be an on-demand buoy system on HABCAM that can come up to the surface and can quickly be retrieved. We modified the on-demand systems from the lobster gear that work has been going on at the center. So we didn't need to use it, which is fortunate. Hopefully we'll never need to use it. But it is part of the HABCAM package now going forward. We also are continuing to develop and use the long-range autonomous underwater vehicles in the scallop surveys. Those track lines are planned for the end of June in the Mid-Atlantic. Those two instruments are operated by Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution, and the Science Center is in process of procuring a unit to be able to dedicate to the scallop survey needs in the region. The scallop dredge survey, which is conducted on an industry-based vessel, the fishing vessel Selkie, that is underway. It sailed June 19th and will return to port on June 28th. In terms of our cooperative research work, the NOAA Fisheries announced its Atlantic Mackerel Cooperative Research Initiative. That was kicked off on May 22nd, and Anna Mercer gave a presentation on that at the Mid-Atlantic Fisheries Management Council on June 17th. One part of that cooperative research initiative is to also start scoping out a cooperative research initiative around Atlantic herring. So we will be planning workshops. We'll be working with Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission and the New England Council to think about what type of workshop structure would be appropriate to plan a cooperative research effort around Atlantic herring. And then with that plan, we will then look for funding to support that activity. There's a visit from the Scottish Fishermen's Organization that the Northeast Fisheries Science Center was involved in. 16 fishermen were visiting New England to learn about our regional fisheries and specifically how cooperative research supports our regional fisheries. They visited Gloucester, Point Judith, and New Bedford last week. And just thank you to all the industry members and all the fishing industry representatives who supported and participated in that tour. I'm not going to talk as much about Northeast Trawl Advisory Panel. The chair already discussed that to an extent. Again, the big point was phase one of the regional industry-based trawl survey was successful. Thank you, Captain Rule and the team from VIMS for executing that and getting that phase one completed. Phase two, we received funding for phase two in our FY26 appropriation. We are in the process of granting that money to ASMFC, and then ASMFC will run a competition for phase two, similar to how we ran phase one. At this point, we do not have support, financial support going forward from phase two, but we will work to be as successful in phase two as we were phase one. In terms of observers, KB McArdle and Christina Thorpe are going to give a detailed presentation on the operations of our fisheries monitoring and research division, and so I'm going to just pass on my observer program updates, and there will be more on that at the later time during this meeting. In the assessments, our population dynamics branch staff are preparing assessments for the June management tracks, which are next week. Atlantic herring and Georgia's Bank haddock will be peer reviewed. And we are also working on the September management track assessments, which are American Place and Gulf of Maine haddock. As we've talked a little bit about at this meeting, at the recent Northeast Regional Coordinating Council, we set the 2027 assessment schedule and tasked the assessment working group, which has representatives from the science, the regional office, the New England Council, the Mid-Atlantic Council, and Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission, to put forward a draft 5-year assessment schedule for the NRCC to continue to evaluate. You know, the intent is to get back to, you know, a five-year schedule with minor modifications and, you know, try to get away from this, you know, year-to-year planning that we've been in for the past year and a half. So try to get back to a more planned approach to our assessments. Research track assessments, the longfin squid research track, will have its peer review on August 3rd to 7th, and then that will roll into a management track for the Mid-Atlantic Council at that management track peer review, which I discussed already. Northeast Regional Coordinating Council agreed to sort of hold the research track process, you know, where it is, not schedule anymore for the future, and we will pick that topic back up at our fall meeting. We are expecting the new MREP, that's the recreational catch data. We are expecting those new catch estimates in 2026, and those will be incorporated into the 2027 management track assessments. And that will, you know, the data hasn't been released yet, so it's, we haven't been able to look at it. We had a conversation about that at the NRCC meeting and have been in contact with the MREP group about the availability of that data, and we'll keep the, you know, councils will learn about that as we do at the Science Center at the regional office. In terms of our protected species work, again, just there were 23 mom calf pairs sighted this year during the calving season. That is the highest since 2011. So that is a positive sign for the North Atlantic right whale recovery. Cautiously optimistic on that, and the Science Center is continuing to, you know, fly its aerial surveys to monitor that population, and we will be working to produce the abundance estimate annually this fall again. And we are working to sort of have an annual survey, for North Atlantic right whales, vessel survey, and we're working to schedule that for either September or October to do more research on that population. In terms of ecosystem-based fisheries management, the team presented the State of the Ecosystem report at the Mid-Atlantic Council last week. The sort of parallel report was presented to the New England Council at your previous meeting, so that, you know, integration of that ecosystem work into the management process is ongoing. And that is my report, Mr. Chair, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Dr. Hare. I think you kind of skipped over Ms. O'Dell's question, so if...
Correct. So Ms. O'Dell's question, 2025. So we're going to have the similar issue in 2026 because we were 68% successful in fall of 2025 and 67% successful in spring of 2026. And so what that's going to do is increase uncertainty in the indices that come out of the bottom trawl survey. All strata in both surveys, all strata were sampled. But strata with multiple stations, the number of stations in those strata were reduced. So there'll be more uncertainty in the data, but it will be usable in assessments. And so that uncertainty will then, you know, move through the model in the assessments. And that, to answer your question, I hope.
Thank you for that, Dr. And I do want to thank you and the survey team of taking the new approach of trying to look at the survey as a whole when you're scaling back and not just kind of focusing on New England, which we've ran into the past. So definitely thank you for that. Questions? I will go to Ms. Ware first and then Mr. Alexander.
Thanks. On the topic of the trawl survey, I was just curious, while the Pisces was the primary vessel, where was the Bigelow during this time, and was that available as a backup?
No, Bigelow was in the yard. So Bigelow had a longer yard period and came out in April. And so it was an opportunity to work on Pisces. Pisces started in early March.
Okay. And is the plan for Pisces or Bigelow to be the primary vessel until the midlife refit?
Plan is for Bigelow to be the primary vessel until the midlife.
Mr. Alexander.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. John, so you said that they took off a week late. So how, when they get up in the Gulf of Maine, how was the timing? Because, I mean, we had a we had a very robust haddock fishery in the Gulf of Maine. Then all of a sudden, somebody shut the lights off, and if they weren't in the window where they were actually there, then that could be a pose problem in our next assessment for Gulf of Maine haddock.
Yeah, the timing is similar to the fall survey. We at the TMGC, the timing is in that report. Timing was extended later. It's not out of bounds for when the trawl survey is conducted, but both the fall and the spring, it is one of our later surveys in the time series, and so that type of timing issue is something we're going to have to think about in the assessment and management process as those assessments move through the process.
Further questions for Dr. Hare? Ms. O'Dell.
Thank you, Dr. Hare, for answering the fall of 2025. So I was reading some of the material. This kind of goes with Terry's question about the Gulf of Maine. Reading through some of the stock assessment material for the Georges Bank haddock assessment next week, and last year we had on Georges Bank, there was the whiting fishery taking place in Cultivator Shoal that saw a lot of small haddock. We had reports of scallop research that were occurring where a lot of very small haddock, age 1 and 2, were being seen through scallop research. Yet the stock assessment report being considered next week says that there's no signs of recruitment in the fishery. So I just get concerned with the changing of the time of the survey or the lower, various mechanical issues that may impact the ability to survey all the various strata, that we're potentially missing something significant with when we're conducting these assessments. And I plan on participating in the Georges Bank haddock assessment next week, but I am concerned that without having other information to ground truth, that we're relying heavily on a great program. I'm fully supportive of the Federal Trawl Survey Program, but just we can't have all of our eggs in one basket. And I'm concerned that we're missing using that information and relying on it heavily when we should be considering other data sets. So just wanted to make that note.
Thank you very much. I think your comment is one of the rationales for the regional industry-based trawl survey, a complementary survey to evaluate multiple data sources. For Gulf of Maine, we also have the bottom longline survey, and that has been 100% successfully completed since its inception, really. And then we have the Maine New Hampshire inshore trawl survey and the Mass DMF inshore trawl survey as well. But yes, getting a better idea of what's happening offshore would benefit all of us.
Last up, I have Mr. Pierdnock.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, John. Just some quick questions. With the bottom trawl survey, with the reduced density, was that primarily Gulf of Maine, Southern New England, Georges Bank, or was it throughout the whole area?
So in 2025, and we produce sort of quick reports on survey coverage after every survey, and I'll forward the 2025 report to Dr. O'Keefe again, and we are in the process of producing that for the 2026 spring survey, which I will forward to Dr. O'Keefe when it is available. In fall of 2025, it was predominantly in the northern Georges Bank, Gulf of Maine area. The fact that that survey happened at all should be noted as a success because it started during the longest federal government shutdown that we've had. And we got that survey approved to go, and we got people on board, and it was able to complete 68%. But much of the reduction was greater in the northern areas, which is going to affect species that New England manages. And then having learned our lessons from fall of 2025, we looked at spring of 2026 and we said we're going to make our reductions to station density and strata with multiple stations from the beginning. So the reductions are even across the whole survey area and not sort of more more reductions in the Georges Bank, Gulf of Maine area, and less reductions in the Mid-Atlantic. So it's even across the whole survey area in spring of 2026. And that will be how we, that will likely, again, every situation is different. You need to look at, you know, how reliable you think the vessel is going to be, what challenges do you think you're going to have in the future. Do you want to plan for 100% survey coverage, or do you want to start off the survey planning for a 70% survey coverage? Spring of 2026, that decision was relatively easy, and we've learned, and we'll be making those evaluations going into every survey if we see similar signs that we may not be fully successful. So short answer, 2026 survey reduction, station reduction, even across the whole survey area.
Thank you. You know, Terry Alexander noted some observations with Haddock. We're seeing the same down in the Stellwagen area with Haddock. Water's still very cold. Haddock, black sea bass, other species. You know, black sea bass are managed by the Mid-Atlantic, but where we typically would see them at certain times of year, they're late because the water's still very cold. So that's a concern with whether the surveys would actually capture some of these species based upon their location.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is important to just, you know, think the bottom trawl survey covers the whole northeast U.S. continental shelf from, you know, I'm not sure how far what the inshore fathom line is, but from close to shore to sort of shelf edge. And so it is covering the whole area. So species moving, say, from the top of Stellwagen Bank into Wilkinson's Basin, the survey would capture that. Species moving from Georges Bank out into the slope sea, that's an issue for something like Elex, other species, that the survey wouldn't capture. So you know, the survey is covering the whole shelf area. So in some cases, movement wouldn't be impacted, and in some cases, movement would impact.
Thank you for that, and thank you, Dr. Hare, for your report. Up next, I have Mr. Platts with the Mid-Atlantic Fishery Management Council report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'll start with the ecosystem report we had at the Mid. Economic indications are the total revenue and revenue of managed species are declining, but profitability is flat. And I guess implying that costs are down, cost inputs are down. I suspect this position has varying perspectives, but a conversation on the subject was limited. MOM-6 operational forecast for decadal bottom temperature forecasting was discussed. General indications are that the spring conditions are cooling in recent years, with summer and fall temps getting warmer. 2026 has been generally cooler than in the early 2020s, and MOM-6 seems like a useful tool to find value in fisheries management's discussions regarding forward-looking projections of harvest levels and risk tolerance. Possible management implications for past recruitment forecasts and subsequent realities, and the potential to use MOM-6 guidance in risk and risk aversion in future management decisions. Ecosystem approach for fisheries management. There was a review of risk policy and state of risk of various stocks. In general, there have been successively less risk in Mid-Atlantic stocks from 24 to 26. There was some notation of the higher discard levels in scup and spiny dogfish. Vessel baseline discussion. There was commentary regarding the complexity of this issue and how it affects different fisheries and gear types in different ways, with clear distinctions between mobile and fixed gear and from fishery to fishery. As we will have our own discussion on this matter, I will leave that at that. Unmanaged commercial species. This was an interesting report that should be an annual feature of our review process as we look to streamline the number of species which we are actively managing. Landings of unmanaged commercial species in the Mid are generally declining from 2015 to present. Notable exceptions are conch, whelk, and hagfish. Manta ray and John Dory also made the list of stocks that are bucking that trend. I believe a lighter administration lift could be achieved by focusing time and effort on stocks that are rising rapidly in the harvest level or those that are at persistently elevated levels as we move to less managing less stocks. That seems like a useful review for us. Tilefish was discussed as the next subject matter, but given that only 2% of the tilefish are landed, those in PJ, I'll let people pursue that information on the side. I know virtually nothing about tilefish myself. Atlantic Mackerel Cooperative Research. Okay, the last major study on Atlantic mackerel population dynamics was done in the 1950s. This is the initiation of a two-year program to update and refine that knowledge set. And new research elements include acoustic detection development and to track movement, egg survey study to look at timing, spawning seasonality survey to include commercial and recreational vessels, movement and mixing with a focus on U.S. and Canadian stocks, and this will involve acoustic tagging, otolith microchemistry with an eye to determining spawning and catch location, and ecosystem drivers to develop a better understanding of distribution and availability of this stock. Dr. Anna Mercer presented and can provide more details. She is a fast talker. We will be getting an overview of the fisheries monitoring and research this afternoon, so I'm just going to go past that. And on SCUP, the conversation on this issue centered around the desire to give the RA the ability to use discretion and projections to improve management of the winter one SCUP period. While this was essentially an initial action to streamline and expedite the management process, it is safe to say that the conversation was glacially paced and thorough. In the end, several items were moved to considered but rejected bin, and more details will follow as this fast-moving framework advances. Survey updates. The SBRM three-year review will be done for the winter of 2027. This will be a full review covering trawl, gillnet, and midwater effort, unlike the 2023 review. A full report will be presented upon completion. The Science Center will also be merging NEFOP and port sampling operations in pursuit of better efficiency and coverage across fisheries. We also received some updates on fishery independent trawl survey and the ribbit survey and other related topics. And I regret that I have a hole in my notes. I had an unavoidable sidebar. So if Dan or Dr. Hare or Bobby or Terry would like to add some of the particulars on the trawl surveys, unless they've been sufficiently covered, please do so. And Mr. Chair, that covers my report.
Thank you, Mr. Platts. Very good. Any questions for Mr. Platts on the Mid-Atlantic Council report? Awesome, seeing none. Yes, and thank you. I think between the four of us, we did get a pretty good update on where Ribbits is and where we're going. So thank you for that. Up next, I have ASMFC report. Mr. Beal.
Thank you, Chairman Salerno. Good morning, everyone. Good to see everybody, and it's good to see NOAA leadership here as well. I'll give a quick update on, I don't know, half a dozen species and a couple budget updates that are relevant to the council. Of course, starting with striped bass, that's what I do. Where commission's working on a benchmark stock assessment that will be completed in the spring of 2027. And the primary goal of this stock assessment is to, you know, gauge the progress on rebuilding striped bass to the target by 2029 as required in the rebuilding program. So we're on track now, and everything seems to be on track at the commission based on the state's management programs that are in place now. But we want to do a check-in to see how well that's going. The Striped Bass Board also set a steering committee, which is a group that's looking longer term on what the striped bass fishery can and should look like in the future. There's a lot of questions right now about productivity and recruitment and participation in the fishery. And, you know, some of these big picture questions are going to be tackled by this steering committee. And post-release mortality is clearly an important issue in striped bass management. So the steering committee is going to tackle that. You know, one of the big concerns is that we can, through the management program that's in place now, achieve the rebuilding goal of the target by 2029. However, What happens after that is a big question. There's been, as a lot of folks know, about 7 years of very poor recruitment coming out of the Chesapeake Bay. So there's this big hole in the population of what happens after 2029 when those fish should be recruiting to the fishery, but they're kind of not there, unfortunately. So that steering committee is going to tackle that on striped bass. American lobster, the states aren't considering any significant management changes at this point. However, the board did set up a steering committee for, populated by industry members and managers to look at the potential value of a management strategy evaluation to look at the long-term management of the lobster fishery. So that process is moving forward as well. Atlantic menhaden, not much going on in menhaden that affects the fishery up in this corner of the coast, but the commission is considering an addendum that may change the way the Chesapeake Bay fishery, the reduction fishery that occurs in the Chesapeake Bay, is operating through reduced quotas in the bay and spreading out the quota throughout the summer period and other changes to that fishery potentially. So that addendum will be considered for approval for public comment at our commission summer meeting, which is the first week of August. Spiny dogfish, the northern states, and by northern states, it's essentially the folks that sit on this council, Maine through Connecticut, are considering or bringing forward a conservation equivalency proposal that will look at changing the way the fishery is prosecuted as far as stacking and aggregating trip limits rather than having daily trip limits for that fishery. So the commission will review that conservation equivalency proposal again the first week of August. Atlantic sturgeon, the commission has initiated a benchmark stock assessment for this endangered species. There is a data call out right now for Atlantic sturgeon data. That request closes on July 1st, so if anyone knows or has any good Atlantic sturgeon data, please bring it our way, and we'll consider that in this benchmark assessment that's moving through the process right now. The last species is tautog, which is a fishery that's supports a lot of recreational fisheries south of Cape Cod through the Mid-Atlantic region. A benchmark assessment was done at the end of 2025, indicated essentially good news up here. No changes are needed in the Mass, Rhode Island, Long Island Sound area. However, the south shore of Long Island through the Delmarva region does need to take a potentially pretty large cut in tautog harvest. So, there's a number of moving parts there with all those species, and happy to answer questions. The two funding updates, one is the NTAP RIBITS conversation that's been brought up a number of times this morning. ASMFC just received notice that the NOFO, the Notice of Funding Opportunity, was available about 10 days ago. And we've actually submitted our proposal to move that money to the commission. The RIBITS money is included in a cooperative agreement which has about two dozen different projects in total, and RIBITS is one of them. There are a lot of good science programs in there, and we thank NOAA for moving that forward and providing access to it. It's NEMAP survey, it's Maine New Hampshire survey, horseshoe crab, at least a half a dozen macro projects, some cooperative agreement or cooperative research with the industry through CFRF, and a whole lot of really important science projects are all included in this one cooperative agreement. So we've put together a pretty lengthy, as you might imagine, proposal to move that money to ASMSC, and then as other folks have indicated on the RIBITS project, will once the NTAP is wrapped up their work on designing what this phase two project should look like. We'll work with Anna Mercer's shop to develop an RFP, get that out on the streets for competitive bids, and then we'll work with NOAA and the NTAP, I believe, to select the best contractor to conduct phase two of RIBITS. So that's moving forward. Hopefully we'll get that money relatively soon. And the final update is RAPID, which is an acronym. I can never remember what it means, but I know it's recreational data collection, and it's an initiative that's really important to this administration. And it is a NOAA initiative, obviously, but ASMSC has been asked to work with NOAA and set up 8 to 10 regional workshops that are going to work with the states, the councils, the commissions, and NOAA fisheries to map out what the future recreational data collection should look like along the East Coast as well as the Gulf and Pacific Coast. So it's a big project. ASMSC is gonna, we had an RFP out. We're gonna select a facilitator in the next day or two, And that facilitator will run all these 8 to 10 regional workshops. And these regional workshops are focusing on bringing together the government-type folks, the states, the councils, the NOAA fisheries, the commissions, looking at sort of administratively what does the future of recreational data collection look like. And then after those regional workshops occur, there's going to be a public-facing workshop that brings in the fishing recreational industry for hire, as well as private boats and shore-based folks, to talk about what they feel the data collection program should look like in the future. And then a final workshop is going to bring all these different pieces together and map out the direction for recreational data collection. So this RAPID, as you know, folks have said, RAPID is not the replacement for MRIP. It's the process to figure out what the replacement for MRIP looks like. So a lot of moving parts there. The 8 to 10 regional workshops that I mentioned are, even though they're not public facing, they are open to the public, and the public's going to be welcome to attend those. So this is a bit of a heads up to the council. There will be a New England regional workshop. It's not really council focused, but we're using the council regions to kind of organize the conversations about what recreational data collection in the future is going to look like. So we'll reach out to this council, and we need the local insight up here as to when we should have it, who should be involved. Councils will be able to select folks, the states will be able to select folks. There is a steering committee that's organizing these workshops and will provide oversight to the facilitator. John Hare sits on that steering committee along with about a half a dozen other folks and commission staff and others. So again, those are, RAPID's going to be a really big project and a fast moving project, as the acronym would indicate. And we're trying to wrap that up, and maybe the goal is to have all these workshops done by the winter of 2027. So we've got to move pretty quick to get 8 to 10 regional workshops, in place, set up, and moving along. So the commission is game for that, and we've got the staff in place to facilitate that, but it's going to require some responses from all the councils and states and others to make that happen. So happy to answer any questions on that, on any of those updates, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for that, Mr. Beal. That was a very extensive report there. I'm going to forego questions on the next few reports. We're getting a little behind time, and as I said, this is a rather packed day. So, Terry, if you don't mind, you can follow up directly with Mr. Beal on the side right there. I do see Jason Didden's hand online. Jason, I assume there you wanted to add a quick follow-up on the Mid-Atlantic Council report.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Thanks. Clarification on mackerel. While it is true that we depend on some biological data from back in the 1950s, I just want to know, Center has done a lot of population dynamics work all through, including the 2018 mackerel, then I guess it was a benchmark, that really changed the data we use and the perspectives on the mackerel stock. So again, there was a little maybe mix up between some of the old biological data and then the population dynamics, which has been really active in the last decade. So just wanted to clarify that, but I do agree we'll really benefit from that research on the biological data. Thanks.
Thank you for clarification, Mr. Didden. Up next, I have the U.S. Coast Guard report. I believe Lieutenant Oatway will be giving the presentation.
Yes, good morning, Chair. Good morning, Council. Next slide, please. In the time period from the last council meeting in April of 26 to the present, the Coast Guard has conducted 81 fishing vessel boardings. We've issued 24 violations with an observed compliance rate of 86%. Next slide, please. There have been 261 dockside safety exams conducted with 249 commercial fishing vessel safety decals issued. We've done a total of 81 commercial fishing vessel safety boardings. A total of 30 at-sea safety violations have been issued, and 01 commercial fishing vessel termination. That number is actually 02 as of a few days ago, with an observed compliance rate of 88%. Next slide, please. And then our SAR statistics. So the Coast Guard responded to 41 fishing vessel incidents or casualties, 9 disabled or adrift, 3 taking on water, 4 total loss of vessels, 18 lives saved, 2 medevac medicos, and there was 2 deaths in the area, 1 that was fishing related and 1 that was non-fishing related. Next slide, please. And that concludes the Coast Guard report.
Thank you for your report, and I believe this was your first report, so thank you for your presentation. Up next, I have Caleb Gilb, or Already on time. Okay, for the OLE report. Take it away, Caleb.
Yes, I'm already here, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Nice job, Lieutenant OLE. Good morning, council members. Compliance liaison, Caleb Gilbert with Northeast Division, Office of Law Enforcement. Nice to see everyone. Nice to see NOAA leadership here today. A couple details to share with the council today. First, the four assistant director positions that I mentioned at the last two council meetings that posted at different locales across the country have all been filled. Our special agent, James Casson, who has been our acting AD for about a year now, over a year, he has officially been selected as the new Northeast Division AD. So if anyone needs to reach him, I'd be happy to connect you to him. We're pleased to participate in the newly revised, revamped, whatever you want to call it, New England Fishery Management Council Law Enforcement Committee meeting held last month. I think David is going to give a update on that meeting later this morning, but several of us from NED participated in the meeting last May. One quick point to follow up on from the last council meeting as well in April, I think it was Chairman Salerno that mentioned to me the Thayer Mahan project, which I didn't have an update at the time. That was the first news I had heard of it. And the details were published in a National Fisherman article a week before that last meeting, including that it was an OLE sponsored acoustic surveillance project taking place in the Gulf of Maine. And what I've learned by asking around so far is that OLE regionally and at our headquarters may have had little input into the project besides funding it and tracking its progress. My uncertainty there, and I apologize for that, is because I'm still working on finding an OLE point of contact, because this was not an NED project. But I will. Apologies, I don't have more on that today, but if there's any specific questions folks have on that, feel free to ask me and I can make sure to pass those along when I find my point of contact. Next, I'll cover a little of our trade enforcement work since the April meeting. So far in FY 2026, OLE in the Northeast Division has conducted a total of 67 trade monitoring patrols or operations. That's going back to October 1st, 2025. We've conducted 15 new trade monitoring patrols or operations since the last council meeting in April. One highlight of our recent trade enforcement activities includes a joint operation in Chinatown in Boston last April, led by Massachusetts Environmental Police, focused on trade and IUU, that our D1 enforcement officers participated in. Three teams, including officers from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, REOs, Boston PD, Massachusetts enforcement inspected 11 businesses and found very low compliance with state permitting requirements, as well as some shellfish tagging violations. Now, there's one recently closed trade enforcement case I can highlight. A Division I enforcement officer closed a trade enforcement case last week involving a Massachusetts-based importer with a general counsel enforcement section issued NOVA penalty for submission of inaccurate data. In other words, they imported cod, a seafood import monitoring program managed species, without submitting accurate and complete information at the time of entry into the U.S. Moving on to our enforcement support of North Atlantic right whale conservation, I do not unfortunately have any new Atlantic large whale take reduction plan patrol and compliance rate data to share with the council today. I'm working on compiling the second quarter FY 2026 data. I should have that available to the council at the next meeting in September. Also related to our take reduction plan enforcement efforts, I mentioned in April to the council an offshore lobster vessel electronic monitoring project that we helped fund and help design. That project appears to be moving forward. If folks have questions about that, I'm happy to try to answer them, maybe on a sidebar, since I don't think I'm taking questions after this. The hope of that project would be to enable enforcement of all regulations applicable to offshore fixed gear fishing, not just the MMPA regulations. Regarding our efforts to encourage compliance with the vessel speed rule, Division 2 Special Agent recently closed a case in mid-May after General Counsel issued a NOVA penalty. His investigation determined that a New York-based ferry vessel committed seasonal management area violations in transit along the eastern seaboard in December of 2024 while bound for New York following its departure from a shipyard. We also continue to send out VMS geofenced messages for North Atlantic right whale presence to alleviate the threat of both ship strike and gear entanglement. So far in FY 2026, we've sent 1,265 messages, up from 846 messages reported to the council in April. And most of those new messages were actually sent out later in April. We've only sent out 85 since May 1. There's one, speaking of VMS, one VMS-related case that closed recently I can mention today. That involves a scalloper who was fishing inside the Nantucket Lightship area while it was closed. The owner and operator were charged jointly and severally under the MSA with a NOVA penalty for failing to submit the appropriate VMS activity code before scallop fishing and entering, possessing, or harvesting Atlantic scallops from a closed area. They incorrectly coded the trip as a transit trip. Moving on to our observer program support, a couple vessels deployed with observers were reported to be in distress and replaced on 5-minute VMS reporting. One in early April, another in May. Both ended up luckily being false alarms. In addition, a Division I special agent of ours, Tim Wilmarth, is taking over as our new observer program liaison within the Northeast Division. He's hitting the ground running, participated in the center's June observer training event held last week, and the accompanying observer program support panel that always accompanies those events. I also want to alert the council of failures of declared scallop participants to pay for observer coverage. We plan to send a permit holder letter soon to remind participants of their legal obligations to pay for observer coverage if they are selected and carry an industry-funded scallop observer. We hope not to escalate our enforcement actions. We even refer to this as the enforcement ladder. To encourage compliance. There is one bluefin tuna case that may be of interest to the council that closed recently. That case involved charges against a Rhode Island-based charter fishing owner and operator for failing to immediately stop fishing and return to port upon catching a giant. Both the angling and commercial category bluefin tuna were reportedly retained on the same trip. Another part of the charge included failing to maintain an Atlantic HMS in proper form. One last point today I'll share, and that'll be it. Sorry if that was a little bit lengthy. Ongoing non-compliance with all reporting record-keeping and obligations under 50 CFR 648.7 for both vessels and dealers. I mentioned the enforcement ladder before. This is just another point of emphasis where we use graduated enforcement if needed to achieve our compliance objectives. That's all I have to report, but if anyone has any questions later on, happy to take them.
Thank you, Mr. Gilbert. And if there are any follow-up questions, please see Caleb. He'll be here for the day, I believe. Okay, thank you. Up next, I have Mr. Pierdnock on ICAT HMS Dolphin Wahoo Report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The spring meeting of the advisory committee to the U.S. section of ICAT met April 27th and 28th in Dania, Florida at the International Game Fish Association meeting office. It was a tremendous venue with a lot of history. I really enjoyed that. Just to briefly go over what took place, there was an overview of the 2025 results of the 2025 annual meeting. There was domestic HMS updates. There was also updates from the SCRS, which is the scientific arm of ICAT, with the different meetings that took place since January 1st. And the Southeast Fisheries Science Center got into some details associated with yellowfin tuna, big eye tuna, skipjack, albacore, which are undergoing an MSC, and they're refining objectives and reconditioning models and so on. So that's ongoing. The Mako stock assessment is for this year, being conducted this year. The Mako fishery is overfished. Overfishing is occurring. One thing to note is that there was a paper that was presented that changed the age of maturity, proposed to change the age of maturity for Makos, and that's subject to discussion because that could ultimately impact the outcome. Bluefin, more of the same. There's an MSC status check, exceptional circumstance status check, and interesting, Japan had a proposal to measure fish during the transfer with AI, which is, you know, in its initial stages. Next to the 3 days of meetings, the HMSAP meetings in Silver Springs, Maryland, May 12th through the 14th, the meeting included a discussion of the proposed quota increases for Atlantic swordfish, albacore tuna, and western bluefin tuna as a result of the what took place at ICAT the previous year. Comments ended June 8th, and the hopes that by the end of the summer, early fall, the increase in quota would be published at that point. Just to note that the 17% increase that was found, 17% for western bluefin tuna for the U.S. Presently under our quota for the U.S. is under the old quota allocation, and if the 17% moves forward, that would then be implemented later this year, either late summer, early fall. There was the domestic bluefin tuna updates at the time concerning different seasons and bag limits for the private bluefin vessel, charter, headboat, and so on. And since then, it's been approved, and we thank NOAA for implementing those measures, which I'll spare everybody the details, but they are in place. Same with commercial. It's more of the same with the commercial bluefin tuna fishery with the timelines, the dates for whether it's general category, harpoon, or long line. Just to note, the RFDs for general category bluefin tuna, which is implemented July 1st through November 30th, is an RFD for Tuesday, Friday, and Saturday. That's restricted fishing days. Lastly, to note here, the smooth hounds are now listed by CITES, which was a surprise to many. And if you're a commercial seafood operation, you have paperwork you now have to go through to deal with that. Southeast Fishery Science Center updated a shark depredation paper with different mitigation strategies. That's in its initial stages. That was primarily to address the shark depredation down south, but we also have it up here. You know, well, there was also details about the western bluefin tuna slope sea study that John Hare and the Northeast Fishery Science Center participated in, with the great results associated with that. We had a recreational roundtable that was similar to what took place a few weeks ago here, but it was strictly focused on pelagics and different items affecting that. Lastly, Amendment 16, which has to do with changing shark recreational seasons and bag limits, as well as black-nosed sharks commercially, which really is a southerly species. The timeline for that is that by fall or early winter 2026, the proposed rule will likely come hit the public. Last but not least, June 11th, the South Atlantic Fishery Management Council had their meeting in St. Augustine, Florida. Their meetings are a little different, that the committee meets with the council, and then the council ultimately votes upon these measures. This had to do with dolphin, or mahi as I refer it to, and the management strategy evaluation and regulatory amendment 3. Which part of regulatory amendment 3 was to implement measures that reduce catch. Ultimately, the MSC was presented, and the results of the MSC is that the mahi are a high abundance. Spawning spot time mass is 2 to 3 times higher than projected. Mortality is well below FMSY. So. What they ultimately decided to was to put a hold on regulatory amendment 3 because they ran with the model runs with status quo. There was no measurable impact on the stock. They'll continue the MSE process and continue to refine it for future use. So ultimately, if you're a commercial recreational fisherman for mahi, it's status quo for the rest of the year. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pierdnock. Any follow-up questions, please see Mr. Pierdnock on the side. I believe, Dr. Hare, you have a quick follow-up.
I do. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. During my report, I just forgot to mention Andy Lipsky is with me here with me today. He's worked at the Science Center for a number of years. He was our Marine Development and Ecology Branch Chief before going on detail to NOAA. He was on detail at NOAA for about a year from April 2025 to April 2026, and he's now come back to the Northeast Fisheries Science Center working in the directorate as a strategic advisor. And he is here today. He's going to be a frequent participant at council meetings, helping the Science Center in terms of strengthening its partnership with the councils and strengthening its partnership with the commercial and recreational fishing industry. So I just wanted to acknowledge Andy and just let all of you know that he is here and will be here going forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Aaron. Andy, if you want to raise your hand, everyone knows who he is now. There you go. So you got the target on you. Thank you very much for all your reports. We are a little behind, but I would like to come back for our executive order 14276 discussion at 11:20. We are on break. Thank you.